Hello and welcome to another Father-Son Podcast. You're here with your host, Jeff Denz, and your other host, Forrest Denz. How are you doing today, bud?
Good.
Good. You look like you're crying a little bit. You all right?
Yeah.
All right. Glad you're not crying on me. We may have originally had a topic that we need to change.
Yeah.
So we're going to do another Father-Son Podcast. The next one you hear is going to be an emotional one. It's going to be a good one. So make sure you pay attention. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Not you. I'm talking to them. Fourth wall. We're going through the fourth wall. We're talking to the listeners, and not you.
I'm helping you.
Okay.
I'm telling them you better.
All right. Yeah, they better. Or the Forrest Denz is going to kick you right in the face. And he's a little bit short, so if he can't reach your face, he's going to kick you in the balls. Speaking of hurting balls, my podcast, My Balls Hurt, is banned. The one I did with Mr. Andrews. So if you're listening, take a listen to that one if you want to hear something that's not safe for work or anyone under 18. Forrest was not around for the filming of this podcast.
Nope. I had my headphones on.
We banned him in the other room.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. I want you to listen to that someday when you're a little bit older. There's a good story on it. Yeah.
It actually got anything good on there?
Yeah, it was really deep. It was supposed to be deep. The guy that we had over had cancer. Mr. Eric had cancer, thyroid cancer. He had really bad surgery to take it out, so they opened him up. He had like drains coming out of him, all kinds of stuff. So he talked about that. He shared that with us. And then we made a bunch of jokes about bad stuff. Actually, the whole last 40 minutes of it is about bad stuff, so don't listen to it until you're at least 20. But there's a good story in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going on a trip, man. You excited?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of actually sad.
Because you'll be alone.
I know. I like it when you're around. I like to have like the father-son time because I like to do this podcast, you know?
Well, we have the trip coming up in late September.
Yeah. We could probably... we're not going to take all the equipment, but we can maybe do some kind of podcast somehow. Or we can come back and talk about it. We're only going to be gone a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a fun trip. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that, too. We're going to go down and see a Clemson game.
Yeah.
It's our first trip together ever.
Yeah, just us.
Uh-huh.
We've been on trips together.
Yeah, first trip together, just us. First guy trip. We're going to make more of those. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We've never even been to a sporting event together.
Yeah, we have.
Not
just us.
Not just us. Not even local. Because every time we've gone, we've had Destiny, too, at least.
Wait, no.
What?
Not the time that you got free tickets.
To where?
A Sabres game.
It was just me and you? Oh, it was just me and you.
Yeah. So this is our second
just me and you trip. When Mr. Schuster gave us his tickets.
Yeah.
Mr. Schuster just placed third at IBJJF yesterday, or today.
Congratulations.
Yesterday, by the time you listen to this. Yeah. And he's like 162. So that's pretty good. He is like 162, dude. Look at him. He's like an old fucking dude, our old guy. And all the guys on the podium next to him are y'all young and stuff.
Really?
Dude, yeah, dude. Schuster killed it.
He's going against like killers?
Yeah. I'll show you a picture after the podcast, I think.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very nice and gave us some tickets. But this is our first like actual something you could call a trip.
Yeah, first trip. So our second sporting event and our first trip. Well, we won't be alone this time either. At the football game.
It won't be just
But it'll be just us on the trip.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
Not much. Well, basically why we're going on the trip is to help a family. We're just going with a family friend to take her back for her second college semester. Mm-hmm. So we are we're turning it into like a trip.
Yeah.
Together.
My brother, Mr. Keith Ferrant.
Yeah.
Yeah, taking his daughter to college.
Mm-hmm.
Well, back to college because she's already been there.
Yeah.
I may have a fight.
On the 15th?
Yes, on your birthday.
Yeah. I can't believe that the dude that you possibly might be fighting has 100 fights.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
How do you get 100 fights?
You lose a lot really quick. He loses every couple weeks.
Still, like, isn't it hard to have 100 fights without just giving up at the first round?
Well, most of the fights he does give up in the first round, one way or the other. He either gives up or they give up, so yeah. I don't know. It is tough to get that many fights, but to be honest with you, if I didn't have you and I wasn't married, and I'd probably fight that much, too.
What I don't else think you got? You fight that much, but you have a lot of fights.
Mm-hmm. I would have fought that much by now.
I think you'd have more wins, though, and I think you once you started winning more, you would, like, now, you would start, well, even once you started getting older, I think you start spacing them out more.
Yeah, I'd probably be, like, 50 and 50. Yeah. Because I take, like, 10 in a month and then, like, take a break and take some more and take a break.
Stay at 500?
Yeah. It's tough, man. It's tough out there. But back in the day, I might have been a lot better, especially if I had the gym I have now. Mm-hmm. Just would have picked it up. I got a secret, but I can't tell you on the mic.
Cool.
Yeah. I forgot about till just this very second when I was, looked at you and I thought about what you wanted to talk about. And I got a secret for you, but I can't tell you. It's just for me and you.
So I was thinking since you got your black belt, we might, like, I was thinking kind of how much people respect the belts.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere I go, it seems like... Or it just seems like every belt is kind of like a stereotype, and the way that everybody talks about it, each belt, you become sort of a different kind of player.
Yeah, like, what is your understanding of it?
So, most of the time, people are saying that white belts aren't really skilled, and they're trying to use more of their athleticism.
Right.
And they attack you a lot without really, without a whole lot of...
Like spazzy?
Kind of.
They go really hard?
Yeah.
That's pretty true.
They roll hard, but they can't really...
I find that as you get into wipeout, you're just starting to get into the sport itself, so you don't really understand how hard you're supposed to roll, and every roll seems like you're supposed to win, so you roll really, really hard.
Yeah.
Even when you're not doing really, really good, you just keep rolling hard, and then you get tired, and sometimes don't learn like Mr. Jose, but... I'm just kidding, Jose. You don't suck like a white belt.
No.
Maybe you do. But your jiu-jitsu doesn't suck like a white belt.
No.
No, his jiu-jitsu is really good. Just his cardio. He's got... Actually, now he's probably got blue belt cardio. Because he didn't have blue belt cardio before.
And then you get your blue belt, like you're saying. And most of the... Well, there's also green belt sometimes. But most of the time,
our system doesn't use green belt at Alliance, but some do. Usually,
aren't you supposed to be a green belt if you're like 14 or like if you're 16?
Well, green belt is a kid's belt in Alliance for us, right? It's the last belt that you receive as a kid, before you get like an actual adult color belt because you're too young to have one. So you can only get the green belt
as a placeholder.
As not a placeholder, it's just the ultimate that you can get as a kid until you reach a certain age. So. And Buffalo BJJ under Chuck over there, they use green belt, which is a intermediary belt between white and blue. So I believe a four-stripe white belt was a green belt over there. So after you got your third stripe or maybe even your fourth stripe, then you became a green belt. And then after green belt, you became a blue belt. And that was put in there to keep people from dropping out because... Professor Chuck believed that once you're a blue belt, almost all blue belts go on to be black belt because it's such a huge investment to become a blue belt that most people keep training forever.
So it's kind of more like trying to keep people in?
Something like that, yeah. It's just another sort of respect that you're not really quite a blue belt, but you're a little bit better than a white belt. Yeah.
And then...
Because belts in jiu-jitsu last so long. Yeah. Like, you're a belt for so long that... I mean, you could be a white belt for 4 years. 5 years even, you know, before you're a blue belt. And you'd be a blue belt for 10 years, you know? Like, it can really take that long.
Yeah. So, after you get your white belt and possibly your green belt, you become a blue belt. And my understanding of kind of the blue belt stereotype is you're starting to understand how to learn... But you're still trying to find your stride and how hard to roll. And it's kind of like you're there and you're trying to keep going and get better.
See, me now as a black belt, I see blue belt as a belt where you pretty much know everything you need to know to do jiu-jitsu to master it, right? So you understand every technique, every position, not understand it, but you know it. Mm-hmm. So you know, like, you know, you have like 20 half guard attacks, 20 del Hiva attacks, you know, 20 full guard attack, you know, you have all these attacks, you know, the counters, you know, defense. And you're just starting to put together your own personal game.
Yeah.
Like, you just see how it all works together for your body type. And you're still really at blue belt. You're probably still learning from just your instructors or YouTube and your instructors if you're really good. And you're not really at the point where you can put your own techniques together. But you're starting to understand how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then by blue belt, dude, you should be able to roll pretty good. There's blue belts that give me a hard freaking time. Pat Mix is a blue belt. Pat Mix would probably be any blue belt in the world, but he's a blue belt. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, blue belt, there's a deep blue sea, they call it, because you're a blue belt for a long time. And there are some blue belts that are so good, they would smash me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's blue belts that are so bad, I can beat them, like, with my hands tied behind my back. And that's why it's called the Deep Blue Sea, because there's a lot going on at blue belt.
I feel like most of the time, when a fighter is receiving belts, it's usually different from when just a mostly jiu-jitsu player or a gym guy is, or a gym guy or girl is blue belt.
Okay, so there's been some talk at our gym that the fighters have always had an easier path to blue belt. What do you think? By your just personal viewing, not, you know, not anything you hear.
Well, if you're a fighter, usually you don't go to jiu-jitsu class. Mm-hmm. So the only reason it seems easier is they don't go to class. The reason why they can receive their blue belt is they're still learning jiu-jitsu in their practices. And it still usually takes about the same amount of time for them to get blue belt.
Or longer.
Yeah.
Look how long Pat's been a blue belt. And Superfly just got his blue belt.
Yeah.
Solomon just got his blue belt. These guys smash me on the mat.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm fighting to not tap out, not submit them to not tap out a lot.
Yeah.
Well, don't tell nobody. Not that this is public or anything. Them dudes are tough. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Put a gi on them, they're still tough.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really change it. It's not just athleticism, too. They understand the game because, man, the high-level jiu-jitsu that we have in no-gi and MMA, adding punches to it, it's different. It's a different world. Their jiu-jitsu is not as crisp. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't feel as crisp. It doesn't feel as flashy, but it is goddamn effective. And that's what jiu-jitsu is.
Yeah.
It's about being effective.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what about purple belt?
Purple belt is another place where you can...
Sorry, I'm eating some food. Oh, I'm just... Go ahead.
And so you can stay for really, and purple belt is another place where I feel like you can stay for a really long time.
And I was in a deep purple sea forever.
Purple belts are like, they're really starting to put in a lot of thought to their techniques, and they're starting to work out, and they're working out how to do the technique better. And they also, now that, and they can play around a little bit more, and they start to develop, they start playing around a little more since they feel they're better, and they they just play around more and start developing a style.
When I started at purple belt, I sucked. Like, I was okay, I could beat blue belts, but I didn't really understand jiu-jitsu, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a long time at purple belt. And I think that's the most I grew from belt to belt was between purple and brown. I had most of my fighting career there too, though. So I'm not sure how much that has to do with it. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it. But I think at purple belt, you develop a game and you develop counters to everything that people do against your game. So you're really starting to understand how you pass, how everything works.
Mm-hmm.
And I started teaching at Purple. I mean, I was Purple for a long time, but I started teaching kids class at Purple. And I learned a lot from teaching, too. And I really learned once we got to Alliance, I went back and I really looked at the curriculum, and I had to really like learn the curriculum the way that we do it and not the way that works the Buffalo BJJ way. So I started to see differences between the techniques, and that's when I really started to understand why I'm doing some of the things I do. Mm-hmm. And it really made me take a look at everything I do and why I do it. And Professor Dubb is very instrumental in that too, because the way he breaks down techniques, it makes you feel like you're a retard for not knowing how to do it the right way and not really understanding it. And then after a while, I started to get it, you know, and then mm-hmm. I started feeling like less and less of a retard all the time, because I really thought about, why do I do this? Why do I do that? When I come up here, what happens here? Where should my hands go? Why do my hands go there? Why have I always put my hands there? Is it better to do it like this? Why don't I try it like that? And I learned a ton at Purple Belt. I think the most I ever learned. And I really understood exactly how to play my game. And actually, I think at Purple Belt, I was better than I am now on the mat. I was healthier. I was more committed. I played my game, and I only played my game. So I played my A game all the time in practice, kind of like how Antonio does now. It was a different game. It wasn't about sweeps. It was about triangles and attacking. But I was a I feel like I was a monster at Purple Belt on the mat, better than I am now. I think Purple Belt me beats, well, not beats Black Belt me, but puts me in a lot of trouble over and over and over and over and over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. Purple Belt me was an animal.
And, that'd be awesome.
I was, I was the healthiest and strongest I've ever been at that age. Mm-hmm. And like my first couple years of Purple Belt when I was really learning, and I was on the mats every day. And all I did was jiu-jitsu, because we were still at Professor Chuck's, right? I didn't have much MMA. So I was training jiu-jitsu every day, sometimes twice a day, because those were the times where I wasn't really working all the time. So I was able to train a lot. So mm-hmm. that was probably the best I ever was at jiu-jitsu.
It'd be kind of cool to see like how you would fare against what you were at each belt.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start getting even deeper into Black Belt, it'd be really interesting to think about how it would play out if you had to roll against yourself at a different belt level.
Yeah, I think I would smash me at Purple Belt, because I was aggressive enough that I made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
Right? I left myself open because I didn't think I could be submitted. And there wasn't too many people that could submit me back then, but everyone was kind of my level back then. Now everyone's really good, right? So I think I could submit me back. I don't know. It's hard to tell, because I know how I felt then and I know how I feel now. But if they roll against each other, I mean, I got like 6 more years on the mats, dude, and you learn a lot in that time. You know, my experience is a lot different, and my weight distribution is different, and I would probably be able to hold myself down, and I'd be one of those guys that Purple Belt me hated that just smashed the shit out of me, like Larry Backless used to do, and I would probably do that to myself.
Uh-huh.
But that's the best I ever felt. I was training all the time. I loved it.
So at that, so once you get to Purple Belt, do you think that they should make the time that you're Purple Belt longer? Because you were at Purple Belt for a longer time than most people.
I changed gyms, so that held me back a little bit. To be honest with you, fighting holds you back a little bit, because you don't really get into the deep parts of jiu-jitsu. And me being a blockhead probably held me back a lot too. I mean, everyone's path is different. So if you start out jiu-jitsu just trying to learn jiu-jitsu for jiu-jitsu, then you probably progress faster than me. I was really still just trying to fight MMA. So a lot of times, like, I didn't really learn how to grip properly until Purple Belt, right? Most blue belts know how to grip better than me now, maybe,
mm-hmm.
right? They understand every grip. I use grips I use when I fight now. Like, I like the collar sleeve grip, and I don't play much spider guard. I don't play much, you know, lasso guard. I don't play many like gi guards, because I never really liked training in the gi, to be honest with you. I was always training for MMA. I understand it now, which I didn't at Purple Belt, because those games weren't really, didn't start playing until I was a little bit older for Purple Belt. But I think that helped me back a little bit, not playing with the gi.
I like no gi better too.
Yeah.
So
I like gi better now.
So then there's brown belt, which is pretty much the gateway to black belt. And a lot of guys are brown belts. Like, when you're doing jiu-jitsu for jiu-jitsu, when you're, like, pretty young, like, 20-ish, most of the guys are brown belts by the time you were pretty much a purple belt now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the tournament age for some of the guys. Mm-hmm. And I think by brown belt, you're definitely certified to be a head coach of a head coach of any practice, mm-hmm. or any class. Because I think by brown belt, you have enough knowledge and you have you put enough thought into every position and every attack that you use that you can teach a class and make everybody better and not just teach them the technique.
By brown belt for myself, I don't think my game got any better personally. I understand more about aspects of the game, mm-hmm. and I started picking up some stuff I don't do, but I don't really play for my A game. So I think my tournament game is pretty much the same as it's been since purple belt, which is probably not saying much for my tournament game. Maybe that's why my results aren't the best. But I have a much deeper understanding of jiu-jitsu I don't use now, mm-hmm. and I spent a lot of time with Dub and working on a lot of the stuff, like Dub's class, that I don't use. Like, you know, I don't like Delahiva Gar because it hurts my knees. But I understand it. I know how to teach it. I understand the sweeps. I understand the mechanics behind it. Same thing with Lasso Gar. I do use Lasso Gar a little bit, but not too much. It just depends how big people are. And a bunch of other guards, you know, like the Worm Guard and, you know, all the stuff I look at now, and I watch jiu-jitsu videos now, and I break it down, and I can look at somebody's body type and their movement patterns, because it's not just body type, man. How you move influences what we should be teaching you, too. So,
yeah,
I think at brown belt, I start understanding jiu-jitsu enough to start teaching a wide range of body types and athletic ability besides from my own.
Yeah.
And working with the kids is great because you guys don't have body limitations. So, like, I can teach you whatever, and you guys can learn to do it and adapt your bodies to it. But when you teach the older students, you know,
yeah.
like my age or even into the mid to late 20s, some people aren't flexible anymore. They've had injuries or they can't do certain movements.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to help them tailor their game around that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's hard. Look at for example, look at Mom's game. Mom has some poor thoracic flexibility, so she doesn't really move well side to side with her hips on the mat, right?
Yeah.
She has hip problems and a little bit back problems. So for her, escapes can be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
She really needs to learn how to use her hips so she can move her whole hip, because she can't turn her just a little bit of her hip with her back. And
yeah.
it just she needs to stay in alignment posture, right? She can't turn a little bit, otherwise she gets flattened out. So she really needs to be more precise with her movements.
Yeah.
Whereas you, who are her son, who has like half of her DNA, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can have someone have you flattened out, your hips one way, your other legs the other way, and you can worm your way into half guard without a problem and work your shoulders, right? It's just your body type's really not even that different. Now it's different because now you're tall and lean. But when you first started, you were short and stumpy too, like Mom kind of, right?
Yeah.
But you were still more flexible. So your game, while similar, is a lot different. And now your body type's a lot more like mine. Now you should be playing a game I wish I could play, because you're still flexible, you know? And now we can teach you that Pat makes guillotine game too, and to go with my stuff, and you'd be a killer.
Mm-hmm.
And then black belt.
Yeah. Once you're a black belt, you're a professor. And I think once you're a black belt, you're either going all the way for tournaments or you're going all the way for coaching. That's where the paths diverge to either getting tournament better, getting better for you, and trying to get as far as you can go. And then there's the coaching road that you go down, and you learn from coaching more than you learn from actually like actual lessons and classes and stuff. And once you're a black belt, you're a lot better, and then you can play pretty much anything, and you should play a lot of stuff, because then at that point, I think you're trying to expand your knowledge as much as you can by trying to use as many different positions as you can.
I sort of agree with you. I think we're in an isolated area, so there's not as many black belts here as there are in some other areas.
Yeah.
I think, like if you're in California or, you know, one of the hotbeds of jiu-jitsu, you'll see black belts that just come in and just train on their own, and they're not really doing it for competition or just doing it to train because they enjoy it.
Yeah.
You don't see that around here as much because really most black belts have their own school here. If they don't, they work in concert with a couple of the other black belts to run a school. And there's going to be a lot more black belts soon.
Yeah.
You know, in the next 10, 15 years, the area should be packed with black belts. And it'll be a little bit different. So you see guys just come in and train in their black belts. And they're not teaching or really competing. But
mm-hmm.
if you're competing at black belt, dude, you're for real and you're serious. Because those dudes that you're competing against are killers.
That's why you have to go all the way for it.
Mm-hmm. You'll see me when I get killed in some tournaments. I'm going to actually... when I actually retire from fighting, maybe I'm going to pick up little jiu-jitsu tournaments until I get a little bit too old to do anything. But now, look at Schuster, man. He's still doing it. He's like 162.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably just die on the mat. I've been, like, seeing Schuster today really pumped me up, man. I really want to just keep going forever.
Yeah. Plus, yeah. So there are, so like I was saying, so pretty much those are the three different ways you can go.
Right.
Coaching, going by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get as far as you can, and then going all the way to the big tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a long time. And you always respect your black belts.
Yeah. You should respect any belt, pretty much. Yeah. And also, belts in jiu-jitsu are pretty much different from any other belt and most of the other disciplines that are similar to jiu-jitsu or use belts or any other kind of ranking system. And they're respected to any gym you go to. So if you're a purple belt and you go to another gym, you don't have to restart. You keep your belt, and everybody respects that.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter where you come from. Your belt is what...
Mm-hmm.
Everybody respects your belt.
Right. It doesn't matter, like, if you go from one school to another school, you're still mm-hmm. a purple belt, which isn't always like that in karate or kung fu or taekwondo or some of those other arts.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say a couple of things. I don't think that white belts are like bad or fish to be eaten or any of the other stuff. You'll hear me say white belt squeeze a lot, or I'll be like, oh, you do it like a white belt. And while it's derogatory, it's also is meant to be part of the process of learning. So I might say that to you, and then I'll come over and I'll show you, like, look, you can't just squeeze for and then be exhausted after 2 seconds. It needs to be that gradual, just killer squeeze. That Mikey Schultz just gets tighter and tighter and tighter squeeze, right? That's what you need to have. And that's what you don't have when you're white belt, because you're just, you don't know yet.
Learning still.
Yep.
And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. And anyone that treats white belts poorly because they're white belts is kind of a douche. Because that's the future of jiu-jitsu, man. That's what you want to keep people coming in the doors, which puts money into the academy, which gives you a place to train, which eventually gives you a chance to teach and make money teaching, right? It's a big cycle. And if you push money out the door, that's money that leaves the jiu-jitsu community that may never come back in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't run the business side of it. I don't really give two fucks about, you know, how many people come in and pay money or whatever, but I do want to have training partners, and I do want my training partners to get better, and I think the gym should be a positive place for everybody, you know,
yeah.
And I truly 100% believe that,
mm-hmm.
and I would like the gym to be your safe place instead of sometimes your angry place, but we'll work on that. You know, it's tough being my kid at the gym. I understand. All right?
Yeah.
All right. You ready to get out of here?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's get out of here. Next one. Be prepared for forest tears.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And you can't call in and do it. We got to do it in person.
Yeah.
All right. I know you were going to bring your phone. I'm like, yeah. My mom made it sound like not going to happen. Can't do this one over the phone. You got to be here and face the music. You did it. You got to deal with it. All right?
Yeah.
All right, man. I love you. That's your punishment for me. You got to do the podcast with me about what you did.
Yeah.
All right. I love you, man.
Love you, too.
All right. Don't cry.
Okay.
All right.
I won't cry now.
Those are tears coming out. Oh, that's poop. Never mind. Oh, you broke the mic. You literally broke the mic at the end of the podcast. Way to go. All right. We're done.